session number 9253, reel 29.
Mr. Jack Dorgan, reel 29. You were explaining how, as a putter, you'd know where to pick the full tubs up from. Could you continue?
Yes. Well, when you took the empty tub into the working place of the workman who's going to fill the tub, there would be a little siding a few yards back from his working place where you put your empty tub in that little siding, and then you went forward to the working place, depended maybe only a few yards, maybe 20, 30 or 40 or 50 yards. Further in, depended how far the workman had got. And you would say, now, how long will it take you to fill this tub? The workman was always optimistic and say, oh, not very long. But that never satisfied me. It might satisfy some of the putters, but I was always a determined young fella who knew my own mind. And I would say, oh, hell, you can't fill that tub. You haven't got enough coal there to fill that tub. I'll come when when I think you've got it full. And that's what I did. Some men, of course, you could see they had plenty of loose coal to fill the tub, so that when you took the full tub out, you always could estimate when you should go back for the next tub. But it had to be an understanding between you and the workman who was filling the tub.
How many workmen would you be looking after?
Well, that depended, you see. In each area or siding, you would have about four, five or six putter lads taking empty tubes in to the different workmen. And it was all governed by the quarterly kevels. Now, for instance, every end of every quarter, every working place was put in one drum, and the putters was in the names were put in another drum. And when the union official turned the wheel of the drum, you were appointed or selected to go to that particular area. Now, I was always a big lad and stood out among the other putters. And if I was on the list number one, I would claim as many workmen to work for as I thought I could keep going, who could meet his demand for empty tubs. Whereas smaller fellas, and fellas perhaps weaker than me might only be able to take two or three workmen to put for. But I always wanted my full limit so that I was always kept busy and I could always estimate, whereas the younger fellas or smaller fellas often got into trouble and they always had to underestimate to make sure that the workmen, because if you had four men to keep occupied with empty tubs and take the full tubs out, and it was found that you had taken too many men on your list to work for, it would soon complain to the deputy. And the deputy would have to rearrange men, perhaps perhaps me, if I was demanding more men, I'll take another man, a workman, from the next on the list. And he had to get one from the one below, and so on. It's all a question of adjustment, that kind of thing. But I always found myself determined to get the most of whatever I could, because, as I said before, when you're 21, you've got a shilling a day, and because you're 21, you've got fourpence a score more than the price allotted to that work. Because all those, the union always, with the management, allotted a certain rate of pay for all those different areas. Very complicated business, but easily solved when you were with it at the time.
One just small technical point. How were the tubs attached to each other and to the and to the ponies? Did they have hooks or some arrangement?
Yes. Well, the tub, at each end of a tub, you had two chains, two loops of a chain hanging down, and also a hook on both ends. So they were interchangeable. You see, you could either take the tub in front with its two chain loops and hook it onto the tub behind it, or the one behind, you could do the same to the tub in front. They were all interchangeable.
And how were they attached to the horse, to the pony?
And then the pony, of course, as I said, with his harness, he had a frame around him, and at the end of the frame, it came to a single bar, and at the end of the bar was a loose piece of round metal which dropped into a loop which is on every tub, and every tub it works, went down the pit, part of its framework around the tub had in front and at the back a hole in which you could put the limbers of the pony into it, and then you had a split pin. Every boy, every putter had a split pin which he put into the drop pin to prevent it jumping out. Because if, for instance, the pony was lively, it may jump its limbers away out of the tub. But with the split pin holding the pin, it was held in place.
What was the rest of the construction of the tubs? What were they actually made of?
Steel. All steel.
And what wheels?
Two pair of wheels, all steel.
What was the surface like that you were dragging them along?
The surface? Bad. Always bad.
Would they ever get stuck?
Oh, yes, often. Oh, yeah. One time the tube was, it got off the rails. There were short rails that the tubes ran on. Short rails are about 2'9" long, and there would be single rails, and then you had wooden sleepers, a piece of wood about 3'6" long, strong piece of plank, and you laid your rails on the sleeper wood. And with a couple of nails, you nailed it down, nailed the rail down onto the sleeper.
Was that part of your job?
Only 2'9" or so long, less than 3 foot, each rail. And of course, sometimes the nail holding down would come out, with the roof usage after many weeks or months, and you got tubes off the rails. One time I remember my tub, a full tub, got off the rails with one pair of the wheels, and I had, after lifting the tub on, there was a heavy work, lifting the tub back onto the rails, I found that I had to, some stones had dropped in the front of the wheels, and reaching past the tub to get the stones off the rail to allow the tub to run, my head got fast between a wooden support at the side and the tub. And there I had to decide to myself how to get out of it. I had to chance. You see, on the tub, which is about 3'6" square, you have an iron bar around the top and a one at the bottom of the tub, right around the four sides, and also an iron bar going around the middle four sides. Now, these bars are fastened to the actual tub size, which is steel plates. I had to decide where was the next nut and bolt. It wasn't nut and bolt. It was a nut to fasten these three bars, each of the three bars, to the tub. And I didn't know where the next nut was. And my head was fast in between the tub and the wooden prop at the side. So I had to decide it in my own mind to allow the pony, to give the word to the pony to pull the tub forward and chance that the nut didn't come any closer and open my skull. Rather a big decision. Well, I had to do something because there was nobody else there to help me. And if I had waited and waited to see who would come along, or if I shouted, there might be hours. So I took the chance and shouted to the pony to pull. The pulley moved and my head was released. I lost a lot of skin, hair, and left ear, was swelled for weeks afterwards.
How close to the man would you get with it? So the rails would run right forward to where the man was working, almost?
All the rails went right into the workplace.
Who would lay those rails? Was that part of your job? Or?
No, the man.
So he laid them?
It was my job to bring a pair of rails and a sleeper and nails. My job to bring them in from the side and from what we call the flat, you know. It was always a supply on the side and where the end of the endless rope. Of spare rails, spare sleepers, and nails.
So you'd bring them up in the empty tubs?
I'd bring them in the empty tub and he would fit them together. Some fellas made a good job of it. Others not so good, you know. Because everybody's not handy. And that's how it was sometimes, that the rails weren't laid very well.
Was putting heavy work, or was it...?
Putting, very, very heavy.
What was the heavy part of it? Why was it so hard?
Well, if the tub got off the way, or got off the rails...
That was frequent, was it?
Fairly frequent, oh yes. Because, you see, the rails underground, the floor, for instance, is not level. And then stones fall from the side of the roadway. And then when you're taking your empty tub in, You never walked in, you know. Not the good putters. The putter who was anxious to make money, he would on the back of the pony's harness equipment. And you can imagine sitting on a chair and your back down, sitting at a chair now, and the chair being the harness of the framework around the pony, and your back had to be so far down that your chest was on your knees, if you follow me. And if a wooden support was there and you didn't get down, you know, that I've told you that you have two props and then a plank across, a wooden plank. A wooden plank is about 2.5 inches thick. So that you may be going along a piece of level roof, and then you come to where a pair of supports are with the wooden plank holding the roof up. And if you didn't get your back down when you're riding behind the pony, well, you got your back scraped. I remember for my digest for a moment, when I got married, my mother, of course, was fairly familiar with my back being scraped, not my back at the spinal, my back where the spinal column is. On your back, everybody's aware you have a spinal column. But a pit pony driver or putter in those days, he knew that he had a spinal column. Because each of that, when you're bending down, it's that part of your back, your spinal column, which you can only get down as far as the room would allow you. And if we escape, and invariably, I was 4 or 5 splotches on my back, scraped and scabbed. I remember when my wife first saw them and her sister, because on my wedding day, wedding week rather, we stayed with her sister. And as I came home from work and I was washing myself in front of the fire, no pit head baths in those days, there could be seen these scabs, these scrapes on each of my spinal column. Each one. An awful business, you know. So my mother, when I was at home, before I was married, she used to put Vaseline around them. And that became my wife's job when I got married, putting Vaseline on it. Ordinary Vaseline.
So the main part of the heavy labour was putting the wagons back onto the rails.
Oh, yeah, that's what it's called, yes. Oh, heavy work, very heavy work.
Was there anything else about the job that was heavy work?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it was all heavy work, everything. You see, getting your empty tube in, putting the tube into the siding. It was just like the siding was a few yards from where the workmen would be working. You had a special set of rails where you could have a siding up to put your empty tub in. But as time went on, of course, that siding got further back and further back as the man proceeded with his work. You always having trouble if you weren't careful to move. If the floor wasn't level, the rails tipped a little, and out would come the nails that held the rails down on the wooden sleepers. All kinds of complications.
You'd hammer them back in, would you?
Well, you had to. You didn't have a hammer. You got a big stone or something. Hammer it in, and that didn't make a good job, you see. No, all kinds of complications.
How did your leg stand up to this hard physical labour?
Mine stood up all right. Oh, yes.
The one that,
that was a big, strong lad.
So your wound didn't cause you any problem by this time?
My wound...
1917, you'd just been wounded.
No. Because, you see, to cast your mind back, I was wounded in 1916, spent the rest of that year in hospitals in France, Belgium, and then coming over to England in Staffordshire till the end of 1916, and then I was back home convalescent in 1917. By that time, I was a full year at home.
So you were fully fit again.
And I got fit. But it took a long, long, long time in Staffordshire for to get my leg as it should be. And I remember they never hurried me. I spent months and months in Staffordshire, convalescent, you know. And I had a very good time of it.
That's fine. Yes, we covered that. But you didn't have any reaction at all?
No, never had any reaction, no.
Mate, you said earlier you worked a 10-hour shift.
That's when I first went down, yes.
How many rests would you get during the day? Or would it just be when you
rests,
had your
base? Bedtime only. And just the once. You may have, if it was, for instance, a putter lad, he had to rely on his pony driver for bringing the empty tubes in from the endless rope. Maybe at the endless rope had some trouble, not delayed the empty tubes coming in. It may be that the driver boy wasn't supplying the putter lads with plenty of empty tubs, so that apart from stoppages caused by these things, you worked the whole time. But you always stopped once in the day for your bait time. Your bait, of course, as I said, is your sandwiches. My sandwiches was always dripping and bread. A couple of slices of bread with dripping on it, and you had a tin water bottle carried water.
What time would your day have started then?
The day, well, at Ashendon Colliery, it was two shifts. One started 3 a.m. for up to, you know, for what they call the fore shift. Then the back shift started between 8 and 9 a.m. and had finished about 5 and 6 at night.
Which were you on in 1970?
I was always the fore shift. Me,
would
because...
you have a breakfast?
Oh, yes. I was always in the fore shift, as I said, because it suited me to have the evenings or afternoons free for my activities in the scouting world.
But in the when you got up at...
Now, when I got up at 2 o'clock, because it meant getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning... Getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning, getting dressed, half asleep, never no time. I never had any time for breakfast. I had a brother, I had two brothers, who worked in the mines. And if they ever were in the fore shift like me, our Tom, my next brother, he always had his breakfast. Which meant that I would be away to work or perhaps I would wait later, but I'd get away to work before him. And I was always down the pit among the early men, workmen.
See.
So that I was always ready on my job at the beginning of the shift.
So the bait you had was the first food you'd had in the day?
Bait was the first time I had anything to eat that day.
Could you pick your own time for that? Or
yes, so I don't know, we sort of, yes, I suppose we did pick up. There was no such thing as a buzzer blowing or anybody telling you it was bait time. Somebody would say it's bait time and he'd sit down and have his bait. His snap, we called it snap or bait. And of course, as the other pit ponies drivers or the pony drivers as well as the pony putters, as they finished and came into the siding, they would sit down and before very long, everybody in the vicinity, pony drivers and pony putters, would always be sitting having a bit.
At what time?
The deputy evening, when he came around on his rounds, if he saw us sitting there having a bit, we didn't have any special time or anything, we just sort of stopped. Because, you see, it may be that there was a stoppage and there was no empty tubes coming in for some reason. Well, we'd have a bit then. So it was no different at times. But it was a good opportunity for the deputy to sit down alongside of us. And he always endeavoured to be there. The deputy was the man in charge of the district. And he would be there and he would question us, how was so-and-so. Because, you see, he, in the Coal Mines Act, he was responsible to visit every working place in his area every 5 hours. And he had a deputy's big book to sign that he had visited every working place every 5 hours. And they were very scrupulous about that. Because, you see, if there was an accident of any kind, or a fatal accident, the question always was, where was the deputy? Because he was responsible for the whole of the district.
So you'd have you. There was no set time for snap or
no.
What time did you finish the day then? And how would you know it was a time from?
Well, yeah, they'll always allow yourself. Well, you see, the second shift would come in. The back shift, we called it four shift at 3 a.m. and then the back shift between 8 and 9 in the morning. And of course you've got to remember that you went down the pit, you had to go to the stables, get your pony, and you had the same procedure when you finished your work in by with the workmen. You had to put the pony through the wash pond.
What time would that be?
I don't know. I mean, we never took much time. Nobody had watches, you know.
So, but it would be a 10-hour shift altogether from when you started?
Oh, yes, 10 so hours.
You
were supposed to go down and be down the 10 hours, yes.
So it would be in the
from
afternoon?
From going down to coming out, yes.
What? How many days a week or fortnight would you work? How was it arranged?
Well, we arranged every fortnight. A fortnight, we were paid by every fortnight, not every week. You got paid every week, yes, but your total that you worked for was totaled into the 2 weeks, so that you got paid every second week. 1 week, you would work the 6 days, and the next week, you work the 7 days.
So you only had 1 day off a fortnight?
That's right. And the Saturday shift, 1 day a fortnight, that was the Saturday shift, it was short shift. Lots and lots of times on that Saturday, I would go to work 3 a.m, and I would come out of the pit working an hour less than normal, only 9 hours, get washed at home in front of the fire, change.